The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Boy, oh boy. This must be women's liberation. Bet you was one of them karate experts, too, huh?
Nope.
I say it's great. We let them have it. It's about time women got treated like first-class citizens.
Hey, everyone. Another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Today, we're going to be discussing 1978's Girlfriends, directed by Claudia Weill. But before we do that, let's do this little game we like to call Heralds and Denouncements. Boop, 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 boop. Patrick.
I, once again, don't have anything to herald or denounce. since... We were doing this like...
Yeah, you watched one movie, right?
I watched
and
one movie.
It was 3 stars?
Yeah, it was right in the middle, so... Yeah, it was all right.
Fortunately, I've seen 2 movies and both of them were bad, so I could pick either.
Basil?
Fortunately. But,
yep, I'm gonna go ahead and denounce How to Be Single. It's with
no.
that. Yep. I went to the movie. I was hoping to get some good advice. I've been single for a while. Not really good at it.
Great.
But didn't really have much. Didn't give me that advice that I was looking for. Mostly it's sort of suffers a bit from like Love Actually disease, where it's like a bunch of branching stories that are sort of connected to each other. And because the movie tries to cram so much plot into so little time, everything's painted in ridiculously broad strokes and is pretty terrible. I would say it reminded me sort of sleeping with other people, and that this is like the like dark side. This is like the bizarro version. They both have Jason Mantzoukas and are about like young people like trying to figure out how to do hooking up and do all the young people things that are happening. And they both have Alison Brie, but this one was really, really terrible, pretty sex negative, pretty like, you know, resorting to like 90s cliches of what like male and female relationships are. There's a dude, one of the dudes from Workaholics, who like runs a bar, and he's kind of like a casual sleeps around guy. And of course, over the course of the movie, they're gonna make him feel real bad for that, and then by the end he's like maybe finally ready to start looking for something meaningful with his life, stop doing all this, you know, meaningless sex that's empty and whatever. I don't know. But, and I don't know. In some ways, it almost is so bad that it feels like a parody of certain scenes. There's a scene where Alison Brie gets broken up with, and then the next scene, she's reading like a fairy tale story to a bunch of children, and the last page of the book is torn out, and one of the kids is like, "How does the story end?" And immediately Alison Brie's like, "Well, I'll tell you how it ends," and then launches into a extremely bitter tirade about how romance is dead and they're always going to break your heart and you think it's going
oh,
well.
Oh, boy. For a second there, when you said she was holding a book, I was hoping she was holding Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Yeah.
It's almost that bad.
Metatextually, 50 Shades of Grey.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be pretty good too.
There is a part where Dakota Johnson, when she's approaching self-actualization, it cuts to her reading a book, and it's Wild by Cheryl Strayed.
Oh, boy. I thought
that was pretty funny.
Nice. Yeah, I'm going to keep the tradition alive of not talking about movies in the heralds and announcement section. I'm going to herald that episode of Blackish that was pretty good. Where they I've been watching the show with Carla a lot, and I've actually been liking it a lot, especially in the second season. The writing has been pretty great, acting has been pretty outstanding. I really like a lot of the characters, and they actually nailed this kind of very special episode thing at a time, which I think, especially a show that's like about how basically affluent African-American families that and has been like political, but only in a very slight sense, has like basically gone full politics, like has family watching the news and basically talking like very directly about the Black Lives Matter movement and the killings of black people by the police and stuff like that. I thought I did a pretty good job without like too forcefully putting in jokes. I think a couple of times it still happens where the jokes feel a little like shoehorned in to make it like softer, but all in all, I thought it was a pretty good job that they did.
Cool.
That sounds good. Actually, I'm curious to check that show out.
And I, Ruben, will denounce the Sarah Gasa manuscript, which I didn't really hate, but is 3 hours of being confused and not nearly funny enough to make that confusion enjoyable. There are some pretty funny parts, but like one of the major jokes in it is that like someone, like the movie starts off with these like this guy finding this manuscript, the Saragossa manuscript, and he starts reading it, and then like all the time in the Saragossa manuscript someone is like, that reminds me of a story, and then like sometimes it'll be like a story within a story and you'll have no idea where you are in the narrative. And I was like, this is pretty funny, although I thought it was done much better in The Forbidden Room, so made it harder to enjoy, I think, having seen it in really like The Forbidden Room, but I wouldn't be surprised if this was an influence on that movie. So,
when is that movie from? I've never heard of it.
The '70s.
The Saragossa manuscript.
Yeah. 70s. Interesting.
Huh. I can look it up. It's Polish. It's part of my March watching of very long foreign movies. That's what I'm doing in March.
Really looking forward to
that. It's
from 1965. Oh, that's '65.
Really looking forward to that Satan Tango review.
More finger guns that the audience can't see.
Okay, All right. Let's get into our movie. I'm going to do the plot because this was my pick. So, it's the plot is mostly about two women living in New York in the late 70s, Susan and Anne. Susan is the main protagonist of the movie. She's a photographer, and in the beginning of the movie, she's not doing, like, she's not very successful. She's kind of supporting herself with like small jobs here and there, mostly shooting like baby pictures and bar mitzvahs. And Anne, her friend, her roommate, is an aspiring writer. And pretty soon in the movie, Anne meets a guy, Martin, and she marries him and moves out. And so Susan is left kind of alone, and the movie kind of follows her dealing with what it's kind of like to live alone in New York in the late 70s while struggling to be like a struggling artist and also a single woman. So she meets this guy at a party and sleeps with him, but then doesn't see him again for a while. She has a short affair with a rabbi played by Eli Wallach, which is pretty funny. She mostly tries and puts herself out there to get get an exhibit of her work in a gallery. And she finally succeeds by hustling a lot and getting lucky, finally. Meanwhile, Anne has her marriage develop, and they're kind of growing apart a little bit as they see less and less of each other. And Susan confronts Anne with it, and well, they kind of confront each other at some point by kind of tackling the issue of their friendship kind of straying from each other. Susan also, after her affair with that rabbi fails, she meets this guy again that she slept with, Martin. Eric, sorry, played by Christopher Guest. And she moves in with him, and but kind of he's kind of like only a side part of this whole story, and it all ends by Susan and Anne kind of reconnecting at Anne's country house, but the ending is kind of like puts them back at the same spot where they were in the beginning. So when Anne moved out.
Okay.
Yeah, I like this movie a lot. I really like the music, and I feel like it has, honest scenes. There's a lot of stuff that feels pretty real and lived in, and I could imagine even loving this movie either on rewatch or post discussion. So. Let's discuss it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I liked this movie. I didn't super like it, but I liked it. I thought it was fine enough. I felt a little fluffy in places. Like, it felt like some of the stuff was kind of, I don't know, it felt dated in a weird way. It felt kind of like, oh, this is people's idea of, you know, how... like a deep conversation goes in the 70s or whatever, but I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is. I guess I felt like just kind of the like social norms of the time kind of creep into everybody's speech at times. And it, for some reason that felt like it just made it a little like fluffier to me. It made it not quite as meaty as I hoped it would get. But, yeah. I liked it. It was an enjoyable watch.
Yeah, more or less in the same boat as Patrick. I thought it was, you know, fine, but I sometimes found the acting a little bit distracting. It is, like, obviously made on a pretty low budget, and the quality of acting, in my opinion, kind of varied from person to person, and I don't know, the script is pretty cool in terms of like I like the editing and the structure of it. I think that there were a lot of scenes that ended in unexpected places and then transitioned into the next scene in like fun ways that I thought were pretty cool, but I don't know, it felt like I really liked it when people were talking, and then when people were fighting, partly because of the acting, often it felt like it went too big too fast, and that was a little that they should be like the big emotional moments of the movie, and that they didn't quite land for me because the actors couldn't quite sell it. But that's about the gist of my feelings.
Yeah, I love this movie. I really, really liked it. I thought that I thought it was really funny. I laughed a lot. while I was watching it. I loved the idea that men were completely just like a side note most of the time in the movie. Like, they show up and then they're gone again, and the relationships that Susan has with men is just like, well, yeah, here's a guy and then he's gone, and then like maybe here's another guy and then he's kind of gone. So like, men are not like the main point of this movie at all. If anything, they just kind of enter and exit. But it's like, I thought the way that the movie kind of puts Susan and Anne kind of forward was pretty great. It's necessarily a little bit hindered by the fact that it is like, you know, it's second wave feminism kind of, and there's like a little bit of stuff where I feel like, well, maybe it could have been a little bit more like even more progressive. But honestly, like, this is the late 70s. This is when like Scorsese and Coppola and whatever were like the non plus ultra of filmmaking. I think that this is like a great thing, like a great movie to just like disrupt this like narrative of great American filmmaking. Like, it just goes against a lot of the typical narrative tropes of the time. And yeah, I thought it was just, I really liked the fact that everyone in it was like not likable for cool reasons. Like, they acted selfishly and maybe they were narcissistic in some ways that felt really believable to me. Yeah, and even like scenes where I feel like, okay, yeah, this was the time period and it not being a super progressive time, but like the whole thing with Susan's lesbian roommate was, I think, handled actually pretty interestingly. Like, the way Susan acted, I thought, was didn't make her out to be a great person, but also like there were moments that I thought were pretty cool and like way ahead of its time, I thought, especially when you compare it to, I don't know, like Taxi Driver, which was made 2 years ago and is like a total like conservative hot mess. If you look at it now. So yeah, I really liked it, and I don't know, maybe we can discuss and see if this changes my mind at all.
I hope it doesn't. Makes me sad when someone really likes something and then they like it less after we talk about it.
Yeah,
I'd much rather have it go the other way around.
Yeah.
It's a good thing when you're talking about classic 70s American filmmakers that you didn't mention Stanley Kubrick, because he loves this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was about to mention
that. Would have been ironic.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Patrick didn't like it more, because this movie reminds me the most of is a movie that he really likes that I don't, called Francis Ha.
I haven't watched Francis Ha, which like a lot of people I've read have compared it to that. But I also heard that you, like, Ruben didn't like it and Basil didn't really like it. So I was kind of apprehensive about that. But I mean, I really like this movie, so maybe I would really like that if it's similar at all.
I guess, yeah. I mean, it's more interesting that you and Basil enjoyed this movie since you don't like that one.
Well,
the good news is we're the only ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I think Francis Ha, the structuring of it feels more screenwritery, and I don't like that. And I also really don't like the black and white cinematography. I really wish that movie was just in regular color.
I really hate the way Francis Ha looks a lot.
I don't have a problem with it, but getting back to this movie, I would think like a more apt comparison would be something like Woody Allen, which this movie kind of feels like it's in response to, in a way, like Andy Hall, something like that, because of the way it's kind of in the same way, like structured around this person kind of moving in and out of relationships.
It's not because she's Jewish and she's in New York and it's the late 70s.
I suppose there's that too, but I was just thinking more of, like, I guess it's that New York feel too. Like, you can kind of like feel New York. It has its own vibe to things, but more just because it's like, it's a comedy and it's about kind of a person moving through different relationships, with different stuff in their life. And just because I don't know, like Woody Allen's movies always feel so kind of grossly masculine, and in this movie it like eschews all of that. Even in the male characters, like, it makes them a lot softer in ways that feel more natural and feel more real. And I kind of liked that. I kind of liked that also, like, nobody's ever really, like, one-dimensionally bad. Like, I felt there were a few times they could have done that with, say, like, Anne's husband, played by Bob Balaban. Mm-hmm. And he never is, like, just, like, a jerk. He's just, you know, he's just kind of, like, realistically. And they also have that fun scene of him, like, speaking Italian and cooking and, you know, like, sneezing, and she's taking pictures of him while sneezing.
Yeah.
And he gets to be kind of fun in some scenes, but then he's also
accidentally
kind of like,
including their sex photos in the slides of their vacation.
Yeah. I forgot about that. That was funny, too. But yeah, it's, you know.
Yeah, but I would, I guess, I mean, the Woody Allen comparison, like I said, like, I think it's there for sure. But I mean, the main difference is that Woody Allen's characters all seem like his like observational take on life and the characters in life or whatever. None of the people in Annie Hall really seem like well developed, full dimensional people.
That's true.
Whereas in here, a lot of the people that show up in this movie, like, maybe, like, the taxi driver is, like, a caricature, but then, again, the way that he's depicted is, like, funny and then really scary, you know, in a weird way. Like, I think the sensual relationship between Anne and Susan, the way that's handled here is, like, way more, like, they both seem to be, I don't know, they both seem to be more real than lived in, like Ruben said, as people, that they can have the kind of arguments that they have, you know. Yeah. Like the way that Annie Hall and Woody Allen have arguments, I call it, like, I don't even remember, Albie Singer have arguments, but that's just Woody Allen himself have arguments. It's always like, oh, and it's like weirdly sentimentalized, and then it's like about, you know, it's all about like Woody Allen basically like making her into this great person that finally leaves him or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Which is so weird.
I also think that what this movie does what this movie doesn't do that Annie Hall is kind of, and like all of Woody Allen's stuff is like his is always like in search of a joke. Like he always feels like he's trying to turn the situation into like an obvious punchline.
Yeah.
And in this movie, you never get that because this movie's not like, it's not obsessed with making everything out to be a joke. Like it's obsessed with like actually exploring what's going on with the characters.
Yeah. And
that's the main difference, I feel. Mm-hmm.
And it arrives at really funny jokes by doing that. I don't know. There's the part when Anne tells Susan that she's going to marry Martin, and she's like, "Are you sure?" And she's like, "Yeah." And she's like, "How can you be so sure? How can you be sure when you're so unsure?" She says, "I don't know." But then she gets married to him anyway. And I feel like that's like a really keen observation that, I mean, the majority of people, when they get married, yeah, they're acting like they're sure, but they're not 100% sure. No one's 100% sure. But so...
Yeah.
But you're still like, no. Like, sometimes you're just like, yeah, I'm in love with this person and I want to spend my life with them. And it's like, but how do you know for sure? And you're like, well, I don't know. Just do.
Can anybody really know that? I mean, that's the question. It's like, how do you know? You know what the rest of your life is going to be like?
So Albie Singer is Woody Allen's character's name, but what was Diane Keaton's character's name?
I don't remember.
I wish I remembered what her character name was in Manhattan so I could make that joke, but it's been too long since I've seen
that
movie.
Isn't her name Manha Tan?
Manhattan Murder Mystery, her last name.
Yeah. Isn't her name just the name of every movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's how those movies work, right?
Yep.
But I do think that Annie Hall is an apt comparison in the way that this movie is better than that movie, and that Patrick's point yeah. is very true. Like there's the part in Annie Hall where they fight about sex and how he doesn't want her to smoke weed before they have sex because it makes him feel like he's not good enough at sex. It makes him insecure, and that whole situation is just sort of fabricated from like Woody Allen's trying to find punchlines where he likens it to his stand-up, and he doesn't want the audience to be high because they'll laugh at anything. But this movie doesn't do that and still manages some pretty cool, pretty fun conversations. I think when Christopher Guest and her first meet, it's really weird because it's like the worst flirting ever. It's like sort of rude to each other in awkward ways. And I was like, man, if I had walked up to either one of these people and started talking to them and they talked to me like this, I'd be like, all right, I guess I'm going to talk to somebody else. But for some reason, they just keep going with it.
I don't know.
I really liked if we did video bits at the beginning of our podcast instead of audio bits, I would have definitely suggested his like signing for Let's Go Dance when he's like,
yeah,
it's like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like, it was awkward in a way that felt kind of smooth to me. I don't know why. It just felt like they were both kind of into how awkward it was. They were both kind of.
They were
like,
on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
I like the joke about when she asks him if he lives around here and if they want to go, and he's like, "Well, I actually wanted to talk to some more people," and then she's like, "Oh," and then they're like, "So where do you live?" Like, "Well, I live around, oh, really? Because I live around here. You want to go?" I thought that was pretty funny. I thought that's
the part at which, like, if I had been like, "Hey, do you want to get out of here?" and then they're like, "No," I'd be like, "Oh, I'm leaving you forever now."
Yeah, exactly. But I like the way, like, it was so obvious that he was into her as well. That when he said that, I was like, "Huh," like that would be really weird if that's like how this ended. Even recognizing Christopher Guest, and obviously he's like pretty famous or whatever, but like figuring that this, like, that these two people on screen are obviously like vibing off on each other in this weird way, like that would have been a weird ending. But I like that scene a lot, and that made me laugh a lot. And also the way
One joke that I definitely know that Woody Allen would never be able to land, because it's a joke that I feel like he's kind of guilty of, is the one as a person where she goes to see the first guy that who has like a gallery, and he has this enormous photo of panties like right above his head. It's just like the whole time they're having this conversation, there's just this, you know, lingerie woman right above him.
It's just the crotch too. It's like just the crotch area right above his head.
But I was actually gonna say that I actually feel like it's like an interesting twist on convention, and something that you still kind of don't see, that like both of the times she meets like those professional gallery people, they're like pretty nice and helpful to her. Like I feel like almost always like the person behind the desk is like really snotty and rude and like elitist, and is like, what are you doing in my office feeling? And he's like, oh, that's kind of cool, you lied to me, I'll help you out. And
yeah, then, I love that scene. I thought it was great.
And similar with what's her name,
yeah, it's
Bernice,
only the secretary
something.
Secretary who's mean.
Yeah.
And there's the similar scene when she has her stuff up in a gallery and she gets there late and she's like wanting to change stuff. She's like, we could just do it real quick. And then she's like, no, we're not going to do that. Just grow up and then enjoy your opening. Like, people are here.
Yeah.
I was like, this is really cool, because she's like saying sort of like, you know, curt things, but like in a well-meaning way, where she's not being like, I'm better than you, and I'm going to put you in your place. It's like,
yeah,
no, just like, yeah. You know, and you messed up, like, but that doesn't mean I don't
ruined
like you.
Because of it, right. Or anything.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
like, it's not like when she doesn't show up the night before or whatever to like look over things. She's not like, how could you?
Right.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, you should have shown up to that if you wanted to change yeah, the pictures.
Exactly. In both cases, the movie kind of seems to respect the people that are like professionals and have been doing this for a while. It's like, yeah, that guy, you know, like he respects her because she's like hustling and trying to get her stuff out. But then he's like, okay, this is not my thing. Maybe this person will like it. And now please go away because I have this phone call and I'm really, I'm a busy kind of guy because I kind of make people's careers happen. You know, that's okay. You know, he's like helpful for a bit and then he goes away. And then the gallerist, what's her name? I forgot it, but she's
Bernice
also,
or something like
yeah,
that.
She's also really great. She's really nice to her and is like offers her the chance of like getting, and like when she doesn't show up, she's like, yeah, well, too bad you didn't show up. Oh, we forgot that one photo. Oh well, you know. And then they make like the way they make these jokes, and then Susan kind of actually has to laugh because she kind of recognizes that, like, oh yeah, they're right, you know. I didn't show up, you know, but this is still my gallery, it's still my opening, you know. It's still cool that I have this. And I better not make this huge scene.
Yeah,
yeah. I feel like a lot of... Oh, I'll throw this
Let's all talk at the same time. Me, Patrick, and Basil.
I was going to say, I feel like in a lot of movies, those types of characters are people that the filmmakers have like an axe to grind against. Mm. And so they're like...
Yeah, that's a good
you know,
point.
Like trying to make them look ridiculous, but in this movie, you know, they're just like, oh, well, they're just people like everybody else. They're doing their thing, and you know.
Yeah, there's a similar scene in Girls that definitely goes that way, where I forget her name, but Lena Dunham's mom plays like a gallery owner, and one of the characters is doing an internship for her, and she has these like really specific ways that she wants the person to like make her tea for her when she brings it. Like, it's not enough to just like bring her the tea. She has to like steep it in a very specific way where she like swipes it like a specific number of times and then pulls it out right away, and that's like the perfect amount of tea. And I feel like that's the kind of scene that I'm talking about, where it's like so obviously just exaggerating a person of power's like abusing power in ridiculous ways for a joke.
Which
is like, it's cool that these people get to be like real three-dimensional characters, even though we only see them, that guy in one scene and the other one in like a couple scenes.
Yeah, which is funny because Lena Dunham was obviously like super influenced by this movie, apparently, and even invited the director, so Claudia Weill, to direct one of the episodes of Girls. So,
oh, did she do it?
Yeah, she did. She did. She knew Lena Dunham's mom, apparently, because she was like an artist in the in New York in the 70s also. So, yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I guess she didn't learn that lesson from this movie.
Right. Well,
going back to...
Oh, sorry.
The gallery scene, I couldn't help but think it, because like this movie is pretty low budget, as mentioned.
Yeah.
Our gallery scene in our short film subject magic, where it looks pretty much the same, where it's just like a photo like taped to a wall or whatever. Yeah. Well, like random people stand around and clap.
Oh yeah, that, good times that movie.
Couldn't even like get any foam board or something to like put the pictures on like, yeah, right. Slightly professional.
But speaking of Girls, actually, there's an episode of Girls that was pretty, like, you know, like, was pretty controversial or whatever, which is called One Man's Trash, where Lena Dunham and Patrick Wilson check up at his house for a day or two or three, and it's basically just her dating this way older guy just because, you know, she can and wants to at that moment. And it's a really weird episode that, at least at the time that I watched it, I really liked and was kind of surprised at how much hate it got. And the storyline here with Susan and the rabbi seems to have influenced that, actually, which I think is interesting. But, like, the way it is, like, Susan does not exactly go come away from that storyline looking great, nor does that rabbi, obviously, but it's like a pretty believable, like, affair story, mm-hmm. right? Like, they're working together. They're both, like, you know, spending weird. A lot of time. They're both weird. Yeah. And the rabbi and, might be...
Strange Jewish jokes.
Yeah, the rabbi might be way older than her.
Peter Pansky.
Yeah. Exactly, which is this joke that...
And they both...
No one laughs at except the except that rabbi. So, yeah.
And they both either are or wanted to be artists and rabbis. Like, she is an artist but wanted to be a rabbi, and he is a rabbi and wanted to be an artist.
Yeah.
Though,
speaking of, I feel like you're like, not many characters in this are one-dimensional. I feel like the rabbi's wife is. I feel like she's the only one when she's like, I hate football games. Don't go to football games, lady.
Yeah.
I was like, that seems like a pretty cheap joke. Apparently Claudia Wilde doesn't like football games, which, I mean, fair enough, because, like, she also makes Eric look like kind of a jerk when he's like, yeah. First he's like, I don't want to hang out with your friends because I want to watch this football game, and then later he's like barely paying attention to her as he's like watching a football game.
Yeah.
Claudia's got a real axe to grind with the NFL.
yeah. If she has an axe to grind, that's it. It's the NFL.
I mean, fair enough. It's a pretty shitty organization.
It sure is. Yeah.
I can see that. I can see that.
But yeah, I like that the affair sort of starts and then gets interrupted, and then it's just done because... But yeah. And I also like the strange sort of justifications where Anne's like upset with her, and then... she's like, why are you so upset? It's not your husband. Which is like a weird way to defend yourself, but...
Yeah, you're not his wife.
Yeah.
Yep. But I mean, I think that Susan is kind of right in that scene that, like, part of the reason why she's upset is, like, she's now part of the married class.
Right.
And so therefore she has to defend the married people from the singles trying to take their husbands away.
Right.
The sexy singles.
Yeah. And I think she sort of accurately calls her out on that. It's not exactly subtle, but one thing that I really like in this movie is they're arguing about what color to paint the walls, and then she gets married and leaves the apartment, and then, like, the very first shot after the wedding montage is her painting the wall the color that she wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Right. It's like
red. Right away. Which is a really weird wall color to paint your wall, but
it is.
It's like that red color. I would have a wall that color. I'd be down with that.
It's like this color.
I guess one wall. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess one wall would be okay. All the walls are red.
Yeah, if you did the whole room, that'd be very unsettling. But
it's the red room.
As an accent wall, it's pretty cool. I liked how terrible Eli Wallach was at miming when he was talking about Marlstone or so. I mean, they're both really bad at it, but it made me laugh.
Yeah.
He's, like, lighting a cigarette, and it's, like, huge in his mouth, or, like, it's two cigarettes, I couldn't tell.
Yeah, the cording in that scene was really, really, really funny and heartwarmingly awkward. Like, did not really work. Like, I don't know who else would have been seduced by either of those people.
All of the stuff about sex in this movie is, like, pretty believably awkward in a way that definitely rings more true with my experiences in life than where it's like, yeah, there were some charming parts and, like, that's, and we both liked each other and that's why things moved forward. But, like, if you think about it, like, from a distance now, you're like, yeah, that was pretty weird and awkward. Like, everything that led up to this. I'm pretty sure that y'all have all heard this story at this point, but my college girlfriend, the first time that we did anything together, it was Halloween, and, like, we had been spending like the past like week or two, another friend of ours had just broken up, or his girlfriend had broken up with him, and he was like really sad, and he was like, I never want to date anyone again or whatever. And then some, you know, hot girl started like dancing with him at Halloween, and they like started making out or whatever. So we were just making fun of him like really hard, and then dancing ourselves, and we were like pretending to be them, like we were each playing, you know. She was like, I was like, oh, I'm so sad about my relationship. And she's like, let me make you happy or whatever. And then at a certain point, she was like just giving me this look. And I was like, I don't know whether we're still playing. This is becoming real. And then I was like, after like 15 minutes or like a really long time of her just like looking at me, I was like, all right, I'm going to lean in for a kiss and see what happens. Mm. And that was sort of the beginning of our relationship. And then it was super awkward from there, too, for like another 3 weeks before we like actually really became a couple. Mm. Nice. So very, very relatable.
Yeah, I love the way that the like Eric gets reintroduced. So the second time you see him, he walks in, he immediately goes for the phone, is like, ah, my wallet was stolen. And now he starts calling his credit cards on her phone. And then he sits down, and she had just like brought home some food, like these, like, what did she bring? Like these crawfish or whatever, I don't know. Like, anyway,
shrimp, wasn't it?
Shrimp,
it
was like, yeah. So he sits down and starts like eating her shrimp while calling and complaining about like, ugh, some guy is gonna like take off with this with $35 and like this key to my bike. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? Like, that's not a who the hell wants to date that guy now?
I thought at that point he started to become flirty though, in a way that like she was receptive to, when he's like. And he's going to get an autographed photo of Eno Slaughter, I think is what he said.
I think so.
And she's like, oh, baseball who's that? Player. And he's like, he's in the major league for 18 years, 300 batting average.
I did think that line was kind of a joke, yeah.
But yeah, what I really liked about that scene was the idea, I guess, that like, maybe they would have never gotten together if he hadn't had his wallet stolen, like, sort of near where she lived. If he hadn't been, like, you know, kind of desperate to, like, make a phone call. It was like, yeah, you know, that's...
Yeah.
They enjoy each other's company, and, like, maybe they're going to be a good couple. Although, yeah, like, he comes off pretty douchey in that later scene. But it's kind of like they didn't get together because, you know, some romantic fates or whatever. It was just like... kind of random,
right?
And then he was just like, hey, there's still kind of a thing going here, and I'm still lonely, and you know, I'm willing to accept that loneliness and maybe pursue something to fill it, as opposed to like before, like championing my own loneliness. Like, that was something that I think is interesting sort of later in the movie, as I know that this is something that I feel like is an accusation thrown at like a lot of women, that they aren't willing to be alone, and so they like go from boyfriend to boyfriend to roommate to whatever, so that the, you know, women even go to the bathroom alone and stuff like that. And I thought it was kind of interesting that they were willing to talk about sort of the other side of it, where like Susan like weirdly embraces her loneliness in a way that she's like, she has like a pretty decent roommate situation, and then she's like, I feel uncomfortable, so I need to just like, I can't talk with you about it, just get out of my apartment.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought that was cool, because like, especially, you know, because creative types tend to be like a more solitary people, I feel like they tend to like romanticize that alone time in a way. And in this movie, I feel like, you know, Anne and Susan's argument are given equal weight. It's like, yeah, I don't have a lot of alone time, but, you know, I made these choices. These are things that I really wanted. And, you know, sometimes you choose to be alone for, like, kind of strange reasons.
Right. Yeah, and actually the moment when Susan tells Seal, right, that girl.
Cecile.
Yeah.
Or Cecile, yeah, that stays with
her. She calls her Seal for short.
Yeah, she calls her Seal, right. Is actually, like, it doesn't make Susan look really, like a nice or a good person at all. Like Seal is seems like, yeah, she's, but at the same time, you kind of get it because like Seal is kind of annoying. Like she's like, she just like, she walks into her apartment, she like immediately like displaces all of her stuff and is like, well, you mind if I like put all my stuff here and like I start doing cool exercises here and whatever. But like she's charming, and so she kind of hangs with it for a while, and then kind of when funnily enough, when Anne first visits her, I think Susan kind of realizes, oh, actually, yeah, I don't know why I'm living with Seal. Because like, I mean, I'm kind of living with her, so I have her friend here who kind of reminds me of the situation that we had. You know, basically, maybe she's only living with Seal so she can show Anne that she's living with a different roommate now.
Yes.
You know,
she totally brings Anne over to make her jealous.
Yeah.
She's like, look, a new female roommate.
Yeah, it's no big deal. You know, that's just this other roommate is living here now.
Yeah. And I think there's an interesting also causal thing when she tells her to leave, that it's like her affair with Eli Wallach, like implodes in the very previous scene, so like in a way it's almost her sort of being like, I'm gonna push everyone in my life away, like I can't be with this guy that I thought was going well, and now like,
yeah,
I'm gonna take it out on you, person I have slight power over. That made me sad.
Yeah, still she gets to live in a pretty big apartment in New York for pretty much without having any money. Like, like,
she offers to pay rent. She offers to pay rent. Susan's like, no.
Cool.
Be on your way.
I can handle it being a barely employed photographer.
Like, it seems like she makes enough money at the beginning, but that she's, you know, she doesn't want to do those bar mitzvahs and weddings. And then there's a period where she gets super excited about her photos that were accepted to like that one magazine or whatever, and you know, assumes that she's gonna make it. She got those first two photos and she's like, I'm never doing a wedding again. That's not really how
I mean
that must have, tends to work.
That must have paid tons just getting those three pictures sold to this magazine. must have been like a year's worth of rent, apparently.
She got like $300 or something.
Yeah, it's reminds me of that, you know, Janine Garofalo joke that I guess a lot of people think about comedy or in the arts. It's like every overnight success has been working on it for 15 years or something like that. It's like, yeah, your first job is not the one that usually makes you famous. But I didn't think it was funny that she sort of like threw that also. Like, I knew I would sort of like this movie at the beginning, that she like justifies her annoying behavior at the beginning when she's like loudly taking pictures of her sleeping friend. And then she's like, the light is perfect. And then like later she's like, they like that shot because of the lighting. See, I told you.
Yeah, and then it's kind of funny later, like that's the one that they crop and she's just like, it's not even mine anymore. It's like she's so upset about that.
I would be pretty upset about that, to be honest, too. It's like, yeah, that's a choice that you make as an artist. And I guess I thought that something that was kind of ironically interesting about that scene is that the advice that he's giving her is like, you just got to carry your camera around and like put it right in people's faces, like get right up in their humanity. And I was like, this guy seems kind of skeezy and this seems like kind of bad advice. But like, I feel like you could sort of describe the movie that way, that it's like pretty right up in these people's lives and like, you know, pretty bare and like honest in a way. And I'm like, this is sort of like a weird self-critique in a way. It's like, yeah, this does sort of capture art, but it's like it also sort of makes you seem like sort of an unpleasant person to do it.
Yeah, I think
it's
I think Claudia Weill having been
Ross McElwee in a way.
Yeah, her having been a documentary filmmaker before this, I think she was pretty aware of how like documentary filmmakers spent a lot of time shoving their camera in people's faces, and basically with video they can just do it for hours, and with film they kind of have to wait until something interesting happens or whatever. but like you kind of like it felt like this movie was aware that it's like really getting into people's like I don't know like their parts of their lives that they might be apprehensive about just showing to the world, you know. So I think that it was aware of how basically how openly it portrayed how deeply it kind of went into everyone's life. Actually, when you were talking about what else I wanted to talk about is the relationship between Susan and her other friend, who's also a photographer, who then later kind of moves into her apartment when she moves in with Eric. That's like kind of like only like a big like kind of a side story of all of this, but I really like that relationship because it was like, so this other friend of hers who's also a photographer, in the beginning she's like more successful, or like Susan kind of takes, does she work for her or something?
Yeah, she's yeah. like her assistant yeah, she, a little bit.
Yeah, and then like once Susan gets her gallery opening and meets her friend, she's like, oh, you should definitely get to know, like you should definitely meet her. She might like get you an opening sometime or whatever. And then that works out. So it's like that could have been handled like that girl would have been, or like woman would have been like her rival or whatever. But the way she is her rival, I thought was really cool. Like, you know, like her helping her rival was like in some way kind of asserting herself over her also, you know, like the way that that relationship kind of worked out, I felt was much better than like if they had just like been pitted against each other or something.
Yeah. And I think that it's sort of more, again, like a more realistic depiction of how like artists in a big city do work. Like sometimes you just like help each other out and one person's doing well and another person's not doing as well, so they're able to help them, and then the situation reverses and it's you know, I don't know.
And she does get that opening, doesn't she? Mm-hmm. That friend of hers, she's like in the background of that one scene where she comes to like look at where her pictures will be, where Susan's pictures will be hung up. It's like, yeah, in the background. When I first saw that scene, I was like wondering if did that other woman now get her spot? Like, did the gallerist was like, oh wait, this one is much better than Susan. I'd rather hang her pictures up. But no, that was like, yeah, again, that would have been like a really stupid kind of artificial drama or whatever.
Yeah. That'd be a Hollywood way to do it. You didn't show up, so we gave the gallery spot to your other friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a storyline in, like, Gossip Girl.
Right.
Oh, man.
But I was held up by a car wreck. I'm sorry. You snooze, you lose. Something that I thought was super realistic, and I feel like I've probably been guilty of in my life as being in a relationship, is when they have the friend fight and she comes home looking for comfort from her boyfriend and she's like, do you think I'm selfish? And he goes, no, scared. He doesn't provide comfort at all. He's like, I know you're worried about this other thing about yourself, but here's another thing that people don't like about you. But I thought she did a good job of getting back at him with that pretty witty dig when he's like, all of your stuff can fit in my apartment, and she goes, it's not the size that counts, is it, Eric? No.
Like, oh,
that is extremely witty. Oh.
Yeah,
I like how he seems really rude. I mean, he is being pretty rude when he doesn't want to go over there, but then as soon as it cuts to it, Anna's just yelling at her from the moment she walks in the door. So I was like, I guess, like, I get why he didn't want to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. She might not have been as upset if they had arrived on time, though.
That's true. That's like but
the thing.
But she can't be that. I mean, she's overreacting somewhat to her being late a little bit.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, in the days before cell phones and stuff like that, I can remember lots of times where people were very unexpectedly late, and I was never like, you know, unless it was like to a movie or something where we didn't get to see the movie because they were so late. Like, I'd just be like, well, stuff happens, you know?
Yeah.
Here's where I tell my sad story about how once my old friend told me to go, like, let's meet up at this train station and we'll go to this party. And I took the last train over there and then tried calling him, but he didn't answer. And then I spent the entire night at that train station by myself. Like, and no one called me. And I just spent the entire night there and then took the first train home and then, like, didn't call that friend for, like, 2 months after that, even though he kept calling me, like, every single day. And I was so upset and so angry. But, like, he, like, later told me that his phone died and he didn't know whether I'd even come. So he didn't even bother, like, showing up at the train station, so...
That's really not a good excuse.
Not at all.
Your phone dies. You're like, eh, I don't know for sure he's coming. That's why bother?
It's a pretty bullshit excuse. I still remember it because it was really hurtful at the time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's super inconvenient to have to spend the night at a train station.
Yeah, like. I like walked around and spent part of it in a bank because it kind of got cold after a while and German banks open at night. So you can, like, walk in, and there was this guy that was sleeping on the floor, and I was just, nice. Like, hanging out there next to him, and I was, like, I think I was, like, 16 or whatever. I think I was writing song lyrics on the back of, like, these bank checks or whatever, and they were all about how friends will betray you and whatever. It's pretty, you know, awesome. You think they're gonna be there for you, but guess what, honey? Life is different.
All of my train station stories are scary, not sad or funny. So, don't know how relevant they are. Another thing, though, that I liked about that scene is I feel like the idea of an ex or whatever is something that normally also isn't conveyed that well in Hollywood films. And I guess I feel like the way that she put it, she's like, I'm not too thrilled about her ghost living in this apartment or whatever. I thought that that was kind of nice. It was like, yeah, you know, as an adult, you're supposed to be like, yeah, you know, all my partners are going to have a sexual history and whatnot. We're not 14 anymore. But there's still, like, a part of you that, like, is understandably uncomfortable about it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I agree. I was looking around my bedroom because I'm like, oh man, I have a whole lot of stuff that my ex-girlfriend either participated in the purchase of or bought for me. No paintings, though.
Yeah.
But if they were cool paintings, can kind of see his side too. I don't know. Why should I throw out some awesome paintings?
I've had a couple of good artist exes that I would be happy to hang their work up. I just don't have any of it.
Yeah. I like, I mean, one of the things that I was talking about when I was talking about acting is that I don't think that the woman who plays Anne is particularly good, and that in the more emotional scenes, I found her acting a little distracting, and one of them is the part where they're yelling at each other, where I was like, ah, man, I really like some of this dialogue. I just wish that this scene was hitting me as hard, because I like when the part when she says, I'm still the same person, she says, no, you're not. You're married. Like, we want to pretend that, you know, life events don't change us as people, but they do. We're different people because we have the choices that we make, and getting married is a pretty big choice that changes your life around a lot.
But I like the fact that Anne kind of was also afforded the idea that, well, just because I'm married doesn't mean you can't still, like, if you're my friend, then you will still maybe make an effort to, like, try to like, find time when also I have time, even though it's maybe unreasonably early or whatever. Like, I'm also still kind of, she also kind of still needs Susan to be a friend for her, you know? Like, I like the fact that if it would have been too easy, if this movie was just about, oh, well, you know, the married woman, she's like the big loser, you know, she's, you know, she's not like pursuing her dream or whatever. It's more like, you know, actually, I like the fact that her husband seems to be okay with her, like, or like even maybe supportive of her being a writer still, you know, like that's
more supportive than Susan, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Who's like super dismissive of her writing in one of the first scenes. Yeah, that's not very good.
I kind of agreed with their critique, though.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, her roundabout critique of being like, did you fight with your mom? And she was like, no, not really. And it's like, well, maybe you shouldn't be writing poems about fighting with your mom then.
Yeah. No, I agreed. I didn't think, that was one of the other parts that I thought was really cool, is that the writing is like not very good, but like in a believable way. It's not like overtly bad. It's like, there are some parts where I'm like, oh, that's kind of a nice sentence or whatever. But then other parts where it's like, ah, that's a little schmaltzy, that's a little too much. And
it feels like somebody who's kind of trying too hard to be really eloquent,
for sure.
Which is what most bad writing sounds like,
basically. Right. And but then because she has to like go to work or whatever, she's when she's like, what don't you like about it, she's like, I don't know, I just like that other thing you wrote better, which is like an extremely unhelpful criticism.
Yeah, I mean, although, again, just what I said before, I feel like she does kind of sort of subtly say a thing that she's like, you should write about a thing you experienced or a thing you actually feel, as opposed to imagining what it's like to disagree with your mom.
Right. You don't.
I agree that I didn't think she was a particularly good actress, although I feel like we've been avoiding talking about it this whole time. Her line delivery of "I had an abortion this morning" was actually very good, and very sad and believable, maybe because it's a emotion that a lot of women can tap into.
Yeah.
And I felt like it didn't feel out of left field in a way that I feel like a lot of movies would make that feel, be like, oh, this is just, you know, about two women or whatever, like their fights and whatnot, and it's like, now we're gonna hit you with like that super serious punch. And I think part of that is that it doesn't, I don't know, it makes it feel like just another normal part of their lives.
It's true.
Yeah.
Over 30 years before Obvious Child did it.
Yep. And in just one scene, as opposed to a whole movie.
But yeah, I mean, not to change the subject too much, but going back to the, like, I'm still the same person scene, like, I do agree that it, like, it doesn't pick sides 100%, because then when Susan's like, you abandoned me, it's like, that's an understandable emotion, but it is sort of like coming from the same place that a lot of her other self-pitying throughout the movie comes from, where it's like, I mean, you know, they're not in a relationship, like they're in a friendship relationship, but like,
yeah,
you know, you can't not, like, you know, not get married just to stay roommates with a person forever if you want to get married to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when she says, like, you're the one who left me, that there's, like, and I guess it's existed throughout the whole movie, that there's a feeling that, I don't know, maybe Susan sees Anne as, like, more than a friend sometimes, and that's part of the reason why, in the earlier scene, why she has to, you know, tell Seal that she's not a lesbian. It's because, like, there's that, I don't know, something more going on between her and Anne.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I think that's also expressed in the ending as well. I think when Susan finds Anne at her country house, it's like, that's like a big, like, that's like the romantic scene in romantic movies, where she like goes and gets the girl, like, at the end.
I wrote to you every day.
Yeah.
In the rain.
And then, like, and then they start hanging out and they start talking and drinking together and, like, having a great time together. And then her husband comes, shows up and, like, interrupts it. And is like the intruder or whatever, and like kind of ruins everything. Like, I love the fact that this movie ends on that note where it's just like they don't even show him showing up. It's just like he's there, and then like that's a bummer because they were having such a great time, and finally like Anne seemed to be much more alive than she had been for the past couple of scenes where she was shown. So, yeah. I don't know. I like the way that that kind of flipped the structure of romantic movies a little bit. And I also believe that Susan and Anne's relationship is in a way romantic, but it's not like as simple as Susan just always like just wanting to like be with Anne her the whole time. It's just like actually having been away from her and having kind of experienced like having lived with another woman and kind of having like lived a single life, she feels like she kind of recognizes the kind of love that she might have for Anne a little more clearly, you know, than the way that she had fuzzy it while duck. They were still living together.
Duck, fuzzy duck.
Yeah, that was that made me want to play that game when I was drunk, when I would be drunk.
Also, kind of funny that there is a fuzzy duck in the movie.
It sure is, because he's big duck and she's little duck. So cute. I mean, I feel like I normally wouldn't be into that moment when he, like, gives her a duck. But in this movie, for some reason, it feels like it doesn't resolve everything that came up in the previous scene. It's just like he's being, you know, this cutesy dude or whatever, but then mm-hmm. she still sort of runs off with Anne. You know?
Yeah. So you never really get to see how that story ends.
Yeah.
Between her and him.
Speaking of not seeing how a story ends, has anyone ever put yogurt in their mashed potatoes? Would it be good?
No, I haven't. Never have.
Should be the same as with like sour cream or something, probably.
Yeah, I was gonna say it might.
Oh, I love sour cream.
Sour cream's great. I love sour cream,
it's the
too.
Best. I eat it with pancakes. That's the best.
I made something the other day with sour cream. Like, I made some, like, a Mexican dish that had, like, a big dollop of sour cream, and Peyton commented on it, and it was like, too bad you ruined it with a snowman turd, and I was like, shut your mouth about sour cream!
It's the best.
You know, like, people can eat and enjoy what they want, obviously, but why did they name it sour cream? Like, why?
Yeah, it has a little bit of a soury taste.
Yeah, the Russian word is much nicer, smetana. It's pretty cool.
Ah, that sounds good. I want some real smetana nice. On my food.
I'm on the no sour cream.
But yeah,
I'm with Ruben. I don't like it. It tastes weird. Has a weird texture. It's unsettling. But I was gonna say, as long as it's like not flavored yogurt, if it's just like plain, like tart yogurt, yeah, I could see that working. But not like vanilla yogurt. That sounds really disgusting.
Blueberries. Sure. Blueberry yogurt.
Some strawberry mashed potatoes.
I have nothing to say about it, but I really like the part when she says that my grandfather used to love watching female wrestlers.
I forgot about that.
Her Jewish Orthodox father, or grandfather.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think like female wrestling used to be pretty big in the, you know, 50s and stuff.
I believe it.
Pretty cool.
And I mean, I guess we do still have, like, you know, female UFC fighters today, so.
So yeah. Is that the movie's comment on the way in which men would allow women to be strong. Like, the only way they would allow them is would be for their entertainment and sports.
I don't know. Wrestlers back in those days, it was a lot less, like, sexualized. I feel like there are female wrestlers now, but that it's like their hotness is the main, like, they're also pretty strong, but they also have to be, like, sort of sex symbol-y in a way, and that back then it was just, like, a bunch of, you know, pretty burly ladies throwing each other around. I'm sure that there was a sexual component to a lot of dudes watching it, but it wasn't, like, the same exactly.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
Another thing that I have no comment on, I already sort of mentioned, is that I think the music is really great in this. Like, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that the music is why I gave it 4 stars instead of like 3.5.
Nice. So, win your best score of 1978 award?
I would say it won my best score of most years.
Nice.
Nice. Yeah, I liked it a lot too.
I also like that Eli Wallach is not misethnified in this movie. Like, finally, a movie where he's not playing a Mexican. Where he's playing what he actually is, a Jewish man from New York.
Yep. I also thought it was funny when Christopher Guest's Eric, I think it was, said that he identifies with John Wayne. And I was like, in what way?
I really like this hair too. It makes me sad that in starting in the 80s he has, and since then he's had basically pretty close cropped hair, but his hair looked really good.
He's got that sweet puppet hair. This is Spinal Tap.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. But that's like a wig or whatever. But I never thought of it before, but in this movie, I was like, oh, man, Christopher Guest's actually a pretty good-looking guy.
Sure was.
I always thought of him as just, like, kind of the, like, dweeby-looking whatever guy. But
yeah, I think that kind of became his thing later, but, mm-hmm. yeah. He's pretty hot when he was younger.
Not afraid to appear naked, either.
That's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I forgot that scene was very sweet.
Oh no. What did you think that scene was? Sorry. You froze.
Sweet.
Sweet. Sweet. Yeah.
I thought it was very tender and sweet.
Yeah, I liked that. That was a kind
when
of
they
a
called,
funny scene too.
When they called her mom to when they called his mom to ask if he had mumps. If he had mumps as a child. Yeah, that was pretty cool. I liked it a lot.
If you get as an adult, you get sterile. So,
yep, there's
any of you out there.
As the cab driver said. I love the fact.
Having to get a vasectomy.
Yeah. This cab driver is the font of wisdom.
Yeah, both times that, like, she really, like, got to his emotional core had to do with his penis.
I like how he's, like, really skeptical at first, and then she says he could get sterile, and then he's, like, immediately, like, all right. It's like, give me the phone.
I did the opposite of it. I don't know. I remember when I was a kid, I heard that, like, if you get in a hot tub that's too hot, it'll, like, kill your sperm count, and you'll be sterile or whatever. And I was like, oh, man, I guess I should go in more hot tubs.
Let's get in. Yeah, whenever I hear about phones or cycling. Smoking or whatever, I'm like, sorry, I don't see that as any reason to change anything about what I'm doing.
It's true for cycling, though. You should cycle real hard, Basil.
Well, I gotta buy a bike first, but...
Yeah.
Or just get a vasectomy. I don't know, Planned Parenthood will do it for free if you're poor. Seems a little more sure. Be like, I'm pretty sure we can do it without a condom. I've been cycling a lot.
Really hard lately.
I cycle 4 hours a day for the last year.
Yeah. I've been sitting my laptop on my lap for the past month.
Yeah. I've even been trying to pick up smoking. That hasn't really worked, right. But really, really trying.
I had the mumps. We're good.
Mm-hmm.
Right on.
Oh, yeah. I have no more notes.
I think we discussed this movie pretty thoroughly.
That's true. For almost as long as its running time. It's a pretty short movie, which I appreciated as well.
Absolutely. One more thing going for it. That was at least half a star.
Not me. It's the opposite of what I'm trying to do this month. So rude.
It's true, yeah.
Yep. Well, we got Yee Yee coming up. A little teaser for the listeners.
That's right.
And the man who stole the sun, little darling, who stole the sun.
And I said,
the man did.
Oh, man.
All right.
I'll just talk about sour cream.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go.
Discussions of sour cream and replacing lyrics with movie titles. You should subscribe to us using your podcast listening app. Give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. And hey, participate on our loosecannons.net discus board. Come back or start for the first time. We theoretically miss you, even though you aren't there yet. All right, everyone. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.